Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Monday, May 30th, 2022. I'm Steven Jensen. It is Memorial Day, so I hope that if you have the day off work, you're enjoying your day. I hope, you know, if you got to work today, that maybe this gives you a little time to kick back, listen to some talk about wrestling. Hope you can enjoy the day, spend it how you want to, and I hope you all are having a great day and a great weekend as well. Sorry this is coming a day late. Normally I record on Sundays, but yesterday being Double or Nothing, and so much, you know, news breaking by the minute, it seemed like, when it came to MJF and a whole lot of stuff surrounding that show, it has made a lot more sense to drop this on Monday, because everything was kind of getting overshadowed by Double or Nothing yesterday anyways. But that all said, we have a lot of great stuff to talk about right here on today's show. So I'm going to go through the topics and we'll jump into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for Southeast First Uncharted Territory Season 4 Episode 3. We have results for GCW Downward Spiral, NXT UK, NXT Level Up, MLW Fusion, NWA Power, and BLP, Black Label Pro, Always Bet on Black. Normally, I would do my BTE recaps right here on the Weekender for being the Elite, but I'm going to skip this week, and the reason being is because timeline-wise, it's just kind of weird because so much of it has to do with like the build for Double or Nothing. Now that the show has happened, it's weird to kind of go backwards and talk about BTE. And, you know, with it being Monday, the new BTE will have probably dropped by the time this is even, like, recorded and out there. So I'll make sure to cover BTE this upcoming Sunday on the next episode of the Weekender, and we'll get back on track with the BTE reviews. But before we get into the results, as always, I'm going to talk about my recommended show to watch on independentwrestling.tv, and the show that I've chosen this week is Freelance Underground's Four Quarters. So once again, the company is called Freelance Underground. The show is called Four Quarters. This took place from Thornton, Illinois on May 28th. So this past Saturday, just 2 days ago at the time of this recording. And these are the matches to expect. We've got Alfonso Gonzalez versus Megabyte Ronnie versus JJ Garrett in a triple threat match. We got Heather Monroe versus Blair Onyx. Alex Crawley versus GPA. The Freelance Underground Tag Team titles on the line. The Brothers of Funstruction, Ruffo and Yabo, taking on the Bang Bros of Davey Bang and August Matthews. We have the Freelance Underground Independent Championship on the line. Storm Grayson taking on Wes Barkley. We have the Pick and Pop Tag Team of Cota Hernandez and Darius Luttrell taking on PME, the Philly Marino Experience, Philly C and Marino T. We got a Submission or Surrender match, Project Monix taking on Matt Nix. In the main event of the show, the Freelance Underground Championship on the line, Calvin Tankman versus Joshua Bishop. So a lot of great talent on this show. Highly recommend checking it out. As always, you can use code FIGHTTALK, F-I-G-H-T-T-A-L-K, all as one word, no space. When you put that on the promo code spot on IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv, helps me out a lot when you use that code. It's going to be, I think, $9.99 a month regardless, but it helps me, you know, when you use that code because it lets them know that I'm sending people their way. So I always appreciate that. But whether or not you use my code, please go and check this type of stuff out. There's so much damn good wrestling on IWTV right now. As a matter of fact, they currently have 6,541 events from 297 promotions. So for $10 a month, I really don't think there's a better value in wrestling. And I'm not promoted or like sponsored to like say this stuff. I do have a promo code, but that's honestly really more so. It helps me out just a little bit, you know, having that. But for the most part, it just kind of tells IWTV like, hey, I heard about IWTV by listening to Steven, you know, so that's the reason I'm always plugging that. But regardless, it's such a great, great value for $10 a month. And there's so much damn good stuff. It's always so hard for me to pick out my recommended show on IWTV each week because there's so many damn good options. And as we've been doing the last few weeks, I'm doing reviews of every episode of Uncharted Territory week by week right here on the show as well. So a lot of really, really damn good stuff going on right now on IWTV. Let me highlight some of the talent on this show. JJ Garrett, a guy who still has so much untapped potential, whether you want to call him Thought Steiner or, you know, Pot Steiner or whatever, all these names he's got. He is so talented and so just charismatic, and he's just a guy that I think is going to be such a big star in wrestling. And he's still flying kind of under the radar, but he's gotten some really big opportunities, you know, in the past with GCW. I hope to see him doing more there. JCW as well. And really all over the independent scene. I'm a real big JJ Garrett fan. He's even done some AEW Dark in the past as well. So, and speaking of AEW, Megabyte Ronnie, one of his opponents on this show, he's a guy who, he was getting a little bit of a run for a minute on BTE, and he's the guy, by the way, who, he's like the competitive eater, who actually does competitive eating contests. Not to get down this rabbit hole, but something I actually pay a lot of attention to, similar to kind of how I pay attention to pro wrestling and MMA, I pay attention to competitive eating. I know that sounds crazy and like such like a weird thing to get into, but he's a guy who like I really respect what he can do, because like those pro eaters, I don't think y'all understand if you don't follow it. Like those guys are in like in girls and you know everyone involved. They're in like incredible shape, most of them. Some of them not so much. Some are just like big people who can just eat a lot, but a lot of them are like in really, really damn good shape to be able to like maintain. And like Joey Chestnut, I don't care what anyone says, Joey Chestnut's an athlete. Like that dude is an athlete. When you see that dude putting down 76 hot dogs in like 8 or 10 minutes, whatever it is, on the 4th of July, and he is just sweating and chewing and eating the entire time, like it's impressive. Whether or not you think it's ridiculous, I get it. But my point is, Megabyte Ronnie, I do respect his competitive eating roots. And I would like to see more of him in pro wrestling on like a mainstream level. It's just an odd type of gimmick, you know, to be like shoving hot dogs down your throat, like 10 at a time. And then also being a pro wrestler. It's just, I'm not saying it couldn't work. I'm just saying it's like niche within niche, if that makes sense. But I do like Megabyte Ronnie a lot. I think he has a really good look. And once again, and he's good in the ring. I just think I like the crossover there, because it's kind of two worlds that I'm interested in, pro wrestling and competitive eating, and he kind of bridges that gap. And there's a lot of similarities, by the way, in kind of like the showmanship and the presentation, and there was even a guy, Eater X, back in the day, used to basically paint his face like Ultimate Warrior and stuff, and it's a big show. Like, the dude, I always forget his name, but like the guy who runs the competitive eating, or Major League Eating, I should say, the dude with like he always wears like the hat, and he's always there at the 4th of July, and he does like the intros and commentates and stuff. He does like live commentary on the microphone. And this dude is like the best hype man I've ever seen. Like the way he can get people pumped up for competitive eating is like, it's really a talent how good this guy is on the microphone. You know, every time I see him, he can really get people invested. And, the whole point with that is, you know, there's a very pro wrestling approach to the way that competitive eating on like a major league level is presented. So anyway, the reason I say all this is because Megabyte Ronnie bridges those two worlds, and he's a guy we don't talk about a lot on the show, but, a guy who we probably should talk about more. I hope he gets more looks in more companies. The Bang Bros were on this show, Davey Bang and August Matthews. We talk about them quite a bit right here on the Weekender. You know, I think they're a really, really good tag team that's still really underrated and still flying under the radar, but like a team that eventually is going to really break out, I think. Storm Grayson on this show, a guy who's got a great look, charisma, in-ring ability, just a presence about himself. I think that Storm Grayson is someone who, if given like some opportunities on AEW Dark or Impact or even, you know, NXT or whatever, like, I think that Storm Grayson could really break out in a major company. I mean, I think he checks, like, every box I think you would want. Once again, good in the ring, great look, charismatic, really well presented. Like, I think that just a lot of untapped potential there. His opponent on the show, Wes Barkley, we talk about a lot right here, especially because of his tag team and kind of him managing, him being associated with Joshua Bishop. But Wes Barkley is a great worker in his own right. Like, I never want to overshadow what I'm saying about Barkley and Bishop together, because I think a lot of the time it makes it sound like Barkley isn't as important as Bishop. The reason that I highlight Bishop so much, though, is because I think he's kind of an outlier. Like, Joshua Bishop, I think, could be, like, I think he could legitimately be the biggest star in all of pro wrestling years from now, because with his look and his athleticism and his willingness to, like, literally do anything to get the crowd to pop and stuff. I mean, like, he's like a one in a billion type potential for me. Like, it's hard to, and Barkley, I think, is great at what he does. And I think that would Barkley and him as a tag team, Barkley and Bishop as a tag team, as the Rip City Shooters, I think there's a lot of money to be made with them as a tag team. I like them a lot as a tag team. But there's just as much, if not more, money in Wes Barkley being a part of Joshua Bishop's presentation, who can wrestle when he needs to, but he all, like, Barkley does really, really great promos, and I think he's great as, like, a hype man and partner for Bishop. But it's great to see Barkley also out there having really damn good singles matches too. Like, I think Wes Barkley is really underrated for his utility. Like, he really can be used in any situation as a manager, as a singles wrestler, or as a tag team wrestler. He's great on the microphone. He's got a great look. He's charismatic. His facial expressions, like, he can get you invested. So I think that, you know, more people, it's tough, right? Because, like, Joshua Bishop, like I said, is, like, a potential generational talent. But we got to make sure we're not sleeping on Wes Barkley. And I think that y'all should definitely check out that interview that myself and Jeremy did with John Thorne, if you haven't heard it yet. The guy who runs, promotes, owns AIW, Absolute Intense Wrestling. He talks a lot about Wes Barkley, Joshua Bishop, a lot of those AIW guys. I mean, he talks about Eddie Kingston and Johnny Gargano, guys who have, you know, roots in that company and stuff. And I think y'all should really check out that interview if you haven't listened yet. It's available on the main YouTube channel for the Spotlight for, this would have been, I think, 2 weeks ago. And I believe it's also available as a standalone interview on Fightful Overbooked on that YouTube channel as well. So after the weekend, or if you want to check out a really great interview and get even more insight on some of these guys, check that interview out with me, Jeremy, and John Thorne. I think that really, really great interview there. PME, Philly Marino Experience, another tag team that just flying under the radar, but, like, if you know, you know. You know, I really like in AIW how they've been kind of like the henchmen for Matt Cardona, and it works really well because things have come kind of full circle there, where Cardona and Myers were the edge heads for Edge back in the day, and PME is kind of like the edge heads for Cardona, if that makes sense. Like, they're kind of his henchmen, his lackeys, but they can really go in the ring. So once again, like, it's a win-win scenario. These guys are great in their roles that they're playing as characters, as, like, unlikable heels and that kind of stuff, but they can really wrestle. So, like, it's a win-win scenario. Project Monix, a guy who I really think just, I think I say it every year, and I've been saying it for probably, like, 4 or 5 years now. Like, I'm always like, this is the year he's going to break out. And I don't know why it hasn't happened just yet, but it's going to. He's got the look, he's got the charisma, he's got the size, the in-ring talent. I think that Project Monix is, like, like I said, I've been saying it for years, but, like, he will eventually break out big time. I know he's done a little bit with AEW Dark in the past, so at least there are some eyes on him from that respect, but, like, I think Monix should just keep climbing the indies, just the more reps he can get, and just keep getting booked and keep getting over wherever he can get over. Because, once again, I think he has all the tools to really, you know, make a splash on the next level at some point. Matt Nix I like a lot as well. And I believe I've seen quite a bit of him doing stuff with Pro Wrestling Tees, if I remember correctly. I think he's, like, a big part of their operation, or at least was. I think probably still currently is. I don't pay a lot of attention to Pro Wrestling Tees really anymore. And that's not, like, anything, like, any real reason other than I used to be subscribed to, like, their loot crates and stuff, and I just don't see the value that I used to in those. But that all being said, Matt Nix, a really damn good pro wrestler in his own right. Joshua Bishop, I just talked about a little bit, you know, what more can I say? And we're hoping, I don't want to, fingers crossed, but we're hoping to get an interview with Joshua Bishop for the Spotlight very soon. Maybe even as soon as this upcoming Thursday. So stay tuned for that. Myself and Jeremy, we really want to get Josh on the show, and I have been in contact with him, and we're just trying to lock down the right date and time. But once we get that date and time for you, We're going to make it happen. So stay tuned. I can't wait to talk to Josh Bishop and Calvin Tankman on this show, a guy I talk about all the time when it comes to MLW, when it comes to the Indies, when it comes to Paradigm Pro, when it comes to really anywhere. He is a guy who's just versatile, and I just love that he's with his size and his athleticism, he can do it all. I talk about him the same way I talk about Keith Lee in a lot of ways, where like Calvin Tateman's the kind of guy that can pick you up over his head and throw you over the top rope. He can do a front flip over that same top rope to the outside, you know, seamlessly. I mean, he can do it all, and he can also just straight up look like he can beat you up. I mean, he got good hands. He got a very diverse moveset. Calvin Tateman is a guy who I say it a lot, but I really think that he's going to be, I mean, he's in a good spot right now in MLW, but I think that the sky's the limit for him. Like, he's just barely scratching the surface of how big he's going to be. Because I really think he's the kind of guy that, like, if you were to sign with a Impact Wrestling, for instance, I think you can make him a top guy almost immediately. In AEW, there's a lot of sharks in that pond, right? Like, I mean, like, or in that lake, whatever you want to say, a lot of fish in the pond, a lot of sharks in the lake, whatever. But, like, or in the ocean, whatever you want to say it. Y'all know what I mean. But, you know, Tankman, I think, would be very successful in AEW. But the only reservations I have is there's just so many big stars there right now and so many great talents. And I think Tankman can hold his own with those talents. Don't get me wrong. But then I also think about guys like, you know, JD Drake, for instance, who I think JD Drake is one of the best all-around pro wrestlers in the world. Like, I love JD Drake, but he's been super lost in the mix in AEW for years at this point. And I just, you know, Tankman, I think that Tankman would, you know, he'd just be a tough climb, but that's literally anybody coming from the Indies without like a national TV presence. You know, coming into it, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things, this isn't limited to Tankman. It's going to be tough for anyone, you know, from like the Indies that hasn't been exposed on national TV to really climb the ranks fast in AEW right now, because there's just so much damn talent there. Tankman, though, I think he'd do great in like the WWE system, because I think he would stand out big time on a brand like NXT Level Up, and I think he would immediately be kind of, they'd take notice and they'd probably put him on NXT really fast, and then he'd have a real chance to sink or swim. And I think he would totally, totally succeed in that kind of format. Cause in NXT 2.0, I think Tankman would he'd just like really stand out as a guy who could be a really interesting character. Who's got a different look and a different way that he does things and a different moveset, and like just really, really talented all the way around. And he would have a huge advantage over the people that are there that don't have that indie background, you know what I mean? But is that what WWE wants right now? Who knows? You know, I think they're more interested at the moment in hiring collegiate athletes and Olympians and that kind of stuff. But my point is, I think Tankman could be a major star in any company, but I think, you know, if he got more stuff with like New Japan and Impact specifically, I think he could really, really, really raise his value, and then eventually parlay that into a big contract somewhere with a major company. Now, he might be trying to do that with MLW, which that may work as well. I think that he might be able to get enough buzz through MLW to make that transition too, but I think, you know, I just think Impact has more exposure than MLW does, and I think that's a fair thing to say. You know, Impact, even though Impact flies under the radar in a lot of ways, their big four pay-per-views do generate a lot of interest, and their Impact Plus shows have been really good. So, you know, an MLW just doesn't run that many big shows, and when they do, a lot of the time you can't watch them live, and they get cut up into like months worth of MLW TV, whereas, you know, Impact at least has like the big live pay-per-views and that kind of stuff. So, that all said, Calvin Tankman, he's a star. Keep pushing him. And y'all should check this show out. Once again, it's Freelance Underground's Four Quarters. It's available right now on IWTV. Speaking of IWTV, we have Southeast First Uncharted Territory Season 4, Episode 3, results. We're covering this show every single week right here on The Weekender. And same as with Freelance Underground, same platform. Use code FIGHTTALK. Once again, this is all IWTV. So much good stuff going on over there. These are the results for Southeast vs. Uncharted Territory, Season 4, Episode 3. We had AC Mack open up the show. He's in the ring. Him and Dylan Hales are discussing some upcoming title defenses. Big one coming up, I think they said in 2 weeks, it's going to be AC Mack defending the IWTV Championship against Speedball Mike Bailey. That is going to be massive, and it is going to be awesome, and I can't wait for that. But during this back and forth with Dylan and AC Mack says he wants to defend the title tonight on this show. And Marcus Mathers winds up coming out to the ring, and he cashes in essentially his money in the bank. He won a ladder match a while back at H2O to get a title shot of his choosing. I mean, it's literally money in the bank. But Marcus Mathers winds up cashing in. But AC Mack does retain the title. AC Mack gets the win with a Mack 10 for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Jaden Newman over Shaza McKenzie. Newman gets the win by submission with a hangman's clutch. After that, we had BoJack over Sean Campbell. Finish of this one was a massive lariat from BoJack Campbell for the 1-2-3. And I really like the slow build they're doing with Sean Campbell. Shout out to KOBK. We had Kevin Koo over BK Westbrook in the next one. Koo gets the win with a fisherman buster into a cradle. Kind of similar to the old God's Last Gift that Tyler Black, a.k.a. Seth Rollins, used to do on the indies. And shout out to BK Westbrook. This is a guy who he's really been flying under the radar, and I'm almost positive he's a Jaden Newman trainee. But BK Westbrook's got a great look. He's going to get more size. You know, the older he gets, he'll put on a little bit more size. But he has a super bright future. And he's a guy who we should be talking about now because he's going to really blow up. And I think his blow up will probably be pretty fast because, once again, he's really damn good in the ring. He's completely unknown and undiscovered outside of, like, the Southeast at this point. And in more particular, probably mainly, like, Tennessee. So he's a guy that I really think that, like, a year from now, we're going to look back on this and we're going to be like, oh, yeah, BK Westbrook, he wrestled here, and he's over everywhere, you know, by, like, the end of the year. In a couple years, I think he's going to be a really big deal. So keep your eyes on him. But once again, Kevin Koo over BK Westbrook with the Fisherman Buster into a cradle for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Anthony Henry defeating Brandon Williams with basically... He did, like, the Pentagon-style arm breaker where he, like, goes backwards and how Pentagon, like, breaks people's arms by, you know, y'all know what I mean, but, like, that arm breaker thing he does. Basically, Anthony Henry did that, except he held onto the arm until Brandon Williams had to verbally submit. So, Anthony Henry over Brandon Williams by submission with a Pentagon-style arm breaker. After that, we had Bills Getting Paid, the team of Billy Starks and Billy Tipton, defeating Wrestling's Cutest Couple, the team of Kenzie Page and Hunter Drake. They get the win by disqualification. This is basically what winds up happening. Billy Tipton hits an Emerald Frozen onto Kenzie Page, and then Billy Starks comes off the top rope with an assisted Swanton. Billy Tipton kind of like throws her off the ropes to assist with the Swanton. Swanton completely misses, but that's besides the point. We're supposed to pretend like it hit. Nick Iggy comes out to the ring, and he beats down Tipton and Starks, and he aligns himself with Hunter Drake and Kenzie Page. So the attack from Nick Iggy causes the DQ, but it looked like, you know, the Billies were about to get the win before the disqualification and the attack. Jaden Newman eventually runs off Nick Iggy, and they're setting up something between Jaden versus Nick, which I like a lot. After that, we had the Discovery Gauntlet match, Merrick Donovan over Diego Hill. Donovan gets the win with a Hidden Blade, Will Ospreay style. Basically, that move, Tankman does it as well, but basically like that big running forearm to the back of the head for the 1-2-3. After the match, Shug D comes out, and him and Donovan, you know, they're going back and forth, and I'm interested to see where this goes because I think they would be interesting as like a team or like a part of a group together, but I'm also really interested in them beating the hell out of each other. And I think Merrick Donovan could really gain a lot by having a high profile feud and match with Shug D. But once again, Merrick Donovan with the win over Diego Hill with a Hidden Blade. In the main event of the show, we had Adam Priest over Akira. Adam Priest gets the win after, like, there was a foreign object that he took out of a speaker during the match and he put it into his trunks. When the ref wasn't looking, he winds up taking it out of his trunks, hits Akira in the head with the foreign object, and then nails a spike DDT to get the 1-2-3. Moving on, we have results for GCW's Downward Spiral. This show happened on May 28th, so that was on Saturday night, I believe. I'm looking at my calendar. Yeah, Saturday night. And this show is available on Fight TV, FITE, Fight TV. Show starts off with a scramble match where Early Morning Guy Steel, the biggest mystery in all of pro wrestling. Who is Early Morning Guy Steel? Guy Steel gets the win over Marcus Mathers, Jimmy Lloyd, The Rotation, Matt Vandegrift, and Titus Alexander. The finish of this one is Early Morning Guy Steel hitting a twisting neck breaker on Marcus Mathers for the 1-2-3. And I'm noticing a couple things here. I don't want to feed too much into it because I know that they are trying to throw people off of who Early Morning Guy Steel might be by like giving hints of other people. Like for instance, Jesse, one of their referees, they were like heavily teasing it was him for a while, and like it definitely isn't because I've actually seen footage of the two of them and on the screen at the same time, so they couldn't be the same guy. This match, the finisher seemed a lot like the Moonlight Drive, which is John Morrison's finisher, or Johnny Game Changer, as we're going to get to in a little bit. John Hennigan, John Nitro, Johnny whatever. You got a ton of names, Johnny Impact. You all know who I'm talking about. But his finisher looked kind of like the Moonlight Drive, which was interesting. And he also did kind of like the barrel roll 450 move that Morrison winds up using that I'll get to later in the results. So part of me is like, is Early Morning Guy Steel John Morrison? And it would kind of line up because I think Guy Steel debuted not long after Morrison's non-compete ended with WWE. I could be wrong, but I'm just saying, like, they got my wheels spinning in my brain right now. Like, I'm trying to think who could Early Morning Guy Steel be based on like the size and the move set and stuff. Because he's like currently like heavily padded, like he's wearing like a lot of layers, it seems like, in his outfit. So it's really hard to tell who he is, especially with that mask and everything. But I don't know. I'm just gonna throw it out there. John Morrison is kind of my front runner right now. But that said, Early Morning Guy Steel gets the win in the opener. After that, we had Alley Catch, Billy Starks, and Sondra Moon defeating the Second Gear Crew, the SGC, the team of Matthew Justice, Mance Warner, and AJ Gray. There's a little miscommunication during the match, which I thought was interesting, where I think it was Justice hitting Mance in the head with it. No, I think it was Mance hitting Justice in the head with a chair, actually. And Justice like looked a little out of it, a little kind of pissed about it. I don't know. I don't know if they're planning on breaking up the SGC sometime soon. I don't hate that idea, by the way. I do think there's a lot of money to be made in like Matthew Justice versus Mance Warner, for instance, if they feel like their tag team run has kind of like accomplished all that it can, but we'll see. But a huge, huge win for Alley Catch, Billy Starks, and Sondra Moon. The finish of this match was Moon hitting a power bomb off the ropes through a door onto Mance Warner, and then Billy Starks hits a swanton into Mance Warner, and then Alley Catch throws a chair in Warner's face, hits him with a pussy pile driver, 1-2-3. After that, Speedball Mike Bailey defeated Chris Bay, got the one with the Ultimo Weapon for the 1-2-3. I want to see way more matches between these two. I mean, Impact Wrestling has it right in front of them. They can do this whenever they want to. But yeah, I really, really like this. There was a couple spots that were a bit sketchy. Some of the moves like seemed a bit dangerous, but I was thoroughly entertained as a wrestling fan. Like I think that this stuff is great. The match between these two and yeah, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Chris Bay should be world champion level in Impact right now. Like, he should have been for a while. And Speedball Mike Bailey is legitimately making a strong case for being 2022 Wrestler of the Year. And I'm not talking about just the indies, I'm talking about all professional wrestling. I Speedball is on just like another level right now, and I just can't say enough good things about what he's doing. So once again, Speedball over Chris Bay with an Ultimo weapon for the 1-2-3. After that, Matt Cardona defeats Blake Christian. The finish of this one is Blake Christian going for his curb stomp, Cardona low-blowing him, and then just rolling him up with a schoolboy roll-up for the 1-2-3. I know Joel Pearl always puts it up on Twitter as it happens with Blake Christian matches, but I believe now it is the only people to beat Blake Christian since he left the WWE last year in GCW are Matt Cardona, Jonathan Gresham, and Minoru Suzuki, I'm pretty sure, are the three. So Blake Christian, you know, it's real tough to get a W over him in GCW right now. Cardona gets the win with the low blow, and they're clearly setting up another match between these two. But Blake's also been calling out guys like Johnny Gargano and Jon Moxley. So he really needs to get the win over Cardona back soon if the trajectory is going to be him going for the GCW title soon. But that said, you know, we'll see where it goes. Cardona gets the win here with a low blow and a schoolboy roll-up. After that, we had Nick Wayne and Jordan Oliver defeating Gringo Loco and ASF in a great tag team match. I love both of these pairings of these tag teams. We've seen ASF and Gringo Loco in the ring a lot together, whether it be scramble matches, tag team matches, multi-man matches, even singles matches against each other. But them as a tag team, I'm interested to see more in that. And Nick Wayne and Jordan Oliver have had a long-running alliance. Oliver's always kind of been more of like a singles guy in like recent years with GCW. And Nick Wayne, I think that like the pairing of him and Oliver, this makes a lot of sense. Like, I would really like to see them go on a real tag team run. And then I'd love to see a feud between the two as well. Like, I really liked their involvement with Atticus Kogar feud last year, where like it was mainly Oliver versus Kogar, but Nick Wayne was kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? He was almost like collateral damage. Like, Nick Wayne got caught in the crossfires. Like, almost, for those of you who watch Better Call Saul, he kind of got like Howard Hamlin when it came to that Jordan Oliver and Atticus Kogar feud, where like Nick Wayne was like wrong place, wrong time, trying to do the right thing, trying to help Jordan, and like Atticus was just like destroying his life. That said, Jordan Oliver and Nick Wayne get the win in this one. Jordan hits a clout cutter onto ASF, and then Nick Wayne gets the pin for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Dark Sheik over Jay Vidal, or Jay Vidal, however you pronounce it, because I've heard it pronounced both ways multiple times in different companies over the last few weeks, so I'm always flip-flopping on how to pronounce the name. On GCW, they were saying Jay Vidal, so I'm going to say Jay Vidal for this show, but last week I was saying Jay Vidal because that's what the commentary was saying on the show from last week, so let's get some consistency on that so I don't sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, and so the fans know what to say. That said, Dark Sheik gets the win over Jay Vidal. The finish of this one was Dark Sheik hitting a key crusher onto an open chair for the 1-2-3. After that, Johnny Game Changer with Dad, who is another guy, fingers crossed. Y'all might be hearing from Dad soon at Fightful, because I have been talking to him a little bit. Since the Creator Clash, which was a boxing event that he won a 22-second TKO just a few weeks ago, and he's popped up in AEW Dark now, he's popped up on GCW. Dad's all over the place, and him and Johnny Game Changer was actually with Dad at Creator Clash in his corner and stuff, so Johnny Game Changer with Dad gets the win over Joey Janela. The finish of this one was basically, like I said earlier, it's kind of, I call it a barrel roll 450. It's a 450 splash, but it's like from like a side. It's hard to explain if you don't see it, but it's more of like a 450 cartwheel or barrel roll than it is like a front flip, if that makes sense. It looks really impressive, and I wish he was doing it more in the WWE. Like, I like this move way better than Starship Pain, because Starship Pain, it's so random. Like, the way he lands on people or misses, and it doesn't look that high impact. It's impressive seeing him, you know, twist around like that in the air off of a split-legged moonsault, but, I mean, this barrel roll 450 I thought was way more impressive. I think he should really lean into that being his finisher going forward. He does that onto Janela through a door that was set up on two chairs. After that, in the main event of the show, we had Rina Yamashita and Cole Radrick defeating Alex Colon and John Wayne Murdoch. The finish of this match, and this was a death match, by the way, the finish of this match was... Alright, so John Wayne Murdoch hits a, I think it was a brainbuster, either a brainbuster or Canadian Destroyer, I'm pretty sure a brainbuster, onto Cole Radrick. Radrick's on the ground, in the ring, so Murdoch puts a bundle of light tubes on top of Radrick's body. Alex Colon comes off the top rope with a double stomp through the bundle of light tubes into Cole Radrick. Right when he lands, John Wayne Murdoch turns on Alex Colon, hits Colon with a brainbuster, which I think we all saw coming eventually. I mean, these two just absolutely hate each other, and they're heading into Cage of Survival, and like Tournament Survival's coming up and stuff. And I mean, this is like, their feud has been a real blood feud. That said, John Wayne Murdoch hits Alex Colon with a brainbuster, and then John Wayne Murdoch, JWM, actually takes Cole Radrick and places him on top of Alex Colon so that Radrick has pinned Colon, which is huge for Cole, which I love. I'm a huge Cole Radrick fan, as I'm sure all of y'all know at this point. Been pulling for that guy for years. And, I mean, he gets a huge win. Big visual pin. I mean, he pins Alex Colon in the middle of the ring. And heading into Tournament of Survival, I think that Cole Radrick's got a lot of momentum right now. I'm really looking forward to that tournament. And yeah, they just continue the storyline between JWM and Colon. And Rena, I thought, looked really damn good in there. She's a great deathmatch worker as well. This was really good stuff. I really thought the show was great. So once again, check it out if you missed it. It's on Fight TV. That's GCW's Downward Spiral. Moving on, we have results for NXT UK. Show starts off with Mark Coffey over Saxon Huxley. Coffey gets the win with the crowning glory, the sliding forearm to the side of the head. And that's for the 1-2-3. After the match, Mark Coffey gives a shout-out to Joe Coffey, his brother. And basically, the commentaries, their big question is, you know, is Mark Coffey a singles star now? Like, this is interesting, because Joe was always the singles guy of those brothers. And I think that they're really pushing towards a big Mark versus Joe feud and some, probably a series of matches that I think could be really, really good. Like, I think Joe Coffey is very talented, and I think Mark has been underrated because he's been in the shadow of Joe. So I like that Mark is getting a lot of shine right now. So once again, Mark Coffey over Saxon Huxley with a crown and glory for the 1-2-3. After that, Lash Legend defeats Amelia McKenzie. Lash Legend's NXT UK debut match. She gets the W to win her debut with a pump kick for the 1-2-3. We find out that in 2 weeks, Ivy Nile is going to challenge Satomura for the NXT UK Women's Championship, which I've already read the spoilers for right here on the show, so we know the result of that one, but I'm really looking forward to the match itself. I really am. And for those of you who don't know the spoilers, I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm a huge Ivy Nile fan, and I've liked Satomura for forever. I mean, I talk about it a lot, but, like, I remember her. I'm pretty sure I remember her in WCW. Like, you know, it's been a long time that she's been a big part of the game. But Ivy Nile just, I think Ivy Nile could, like, legitimately be one of the top female stars in all of WWE, and therefore one of the top stars in all of WWE, because, as we know, you know, it's the Roman Reigns show, but, like, right there with him, kind of, tier, if Roman Reigns is tier S tier being like the highest tier when you see those tier charts. Let's say Roman Reigns is an S. Let's say Cody Rhodes is like an S-, because like it looks like they're going to try to put Cody in that spot, but like we don't know yet. Right there for like an A grade, like right underneath the S tier, you got like Charlotte and Becky, you know what I mean? In others, but like specifically some of like the top women in that company, like they are the top stars there. Once again, it's the Roman Reigns show. We're all aware of that. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for Ivy Nile to be a really big deal in the WWE. So I hope this is just a big step towards even bigger and better things for her. After that, we had Shaw Samuels over Damon Kemp. The finish of this one is Noam Dar, who's on the outside of the ring, in the corner of Shaw Samuels, Dar grabs Kemp's leg from the outside to distract him. Samuels hits a double A-style spinebuster for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the main event of the show in a Heritage Cup-style match. We had Charlie Dempsey defeating A-Kid. The falls in this one are as follows. We had round three, Dempsey with a really brutal-looking bow and arrow submission to get A-Kid to tap out. A-Kid does a quick tap, though, because he's trying to save himself for later rounds. So, good strategy if A-Kid was going to win this thing, but he does go down and, you know, 0-1 in round three for the quick tap with the bow and arrow submission. In round four, A-Kid evens the odds to make it 1-1 after hitting a really nice running dropkick to the side of Charlie Dempsey's head to get the 1-2-3. So it's 1-1 heading into the fifth. The fifth round happens, and then we get to round six. And by the way, there was like multiple times that it looked like A-Kid was going to like get a win at the end of a round too. Like that happened in multiple rounds where there was like a lot of save by the bell type scenarios. But in round six, what basically winds up happening is Charlie Dempsey distracts the referee with a towel, and then he throws Brass Nux into the hands of A-Kid. A-Kid like doesn't use them, but like the distraction and confusion is enough to allow the opening for Dempsey to hit a Regal Plex to get the 1-2-3 in the sixth round. So a lot of William Regal stuff here. For those of you who don't know, Charlie Dempsey is the son of William Regal. But really great stuff. I love the callbacks here. The Brass Nux is a Regal thing. The Regal Plex is a Regal thing. By the way, I don't know why. In AEW, they don't call that move the Regal Plex, even when Regal was on commentary. I don't know if that's like a conscious thing or like if Excalibur just loves calling it something else. But I thought it's kind of weird that like, I've seen AEW recently where Regal is literally on commentary and Danielson will hit a Regal Plex and they don't call it a Regal Plex. But anyways, once again, Dempsey utilizes Brass Knuckles as a diversion. He hits a Regal Plex. He gets the win. He wins 2-1 via his Regal Plex in the sixth round, being the deciding fall there. As per usual, another solid episode of NXT UK, in my opinion. I think that they're continuing to develop Mark Coffey as a singles wrestler, so there's a win there. Flash Legend, there's still a lot of work to be done, but she's a prime example, though, of like this new NXT level up, NXT 2.0 kind of mindset, and she's a long-term play for them. Unless they, you know, completely sour on her and she's not there much longer, which unfortunately happens a lot in the WWE system. But if they commit to her, I think she has a lot of charisma and a lot of potential, but she has a long ways to go in the ring. But she does get a quality win here on NXT UK. Once again, Ivy Nile, ton of potential there, and Sada Moore, great UK Women's Champion, so good build heading into their match in 2 weeks for the title. I think that they're just continuing to build Shaw Samuels, and I think him and Noam Dar as a pairing has worked really well. Noam Dar, the Heritage Cup champion, and Damon Kemp, a guy who, you know, everyone's talking about his brother, Gable Steveson, but I think Damon Kemp, I've said it a lot on this show, I think he has a lot of potential, and he's getting better by the week. He just needs reps. Just the more reps he can get, and a show like this is a perfect example of just going out there, getting more reps in a different environment against different opponents. And then Charlie Dempsey and A-Kid. I mean, A-Kid's already been pretty well established, you know, former Heritage Cup champion, always kind of towards the top of the card, always puts on bangers. And Charlie Dempsey, I really think could be the face of WWE. I really do. Like, he's got a great look. He's young. He's got the lineage of being a Regal. I mean, he has everything. And I love his wrestling style. It's very, very, very believable, especially when you know the family he's from. And I think that this show establishes that even more. Like, I could see, in all honesty, of all the people currently on the NXT UK roster, I think with the right build, Charlie Dempsey is probably my front runner right now to be the one to eventually beat Dragunov for that championship. I think Dempsey should probably be that guy. That's just my personal opinion. Once again, NXT UK accomplished a lot in a very short time, which is, you know, very, very good to see. and is per usual, if I'm being honest. I mean, it's a consistently solid show with storylines that make sense and good matches. What more can I really ask for? After that, we had NXT Level Up. Show started with Chase U, the team of Bodie Hayward and Andre Chase, defeating the team of Bryson Montana and Damaris Griffin. The finish of this one is a sweet finishing move. I've seen them do it before, but it always pops me seeing this move. They get the win with a flatline or double team move, which I don't know if have a name for, but basically Andre Chase does a gory special hold, like the behind the back gory special setup, and Bodie Hayward holds up in the gory special. That's right. He puts him up, and then Andre Chase does this running over the top flatliner, this spinning flatliner. It's a really, really nice move. I'm probably not doing a good job explaining it, but it's like a gory special and spinning flatliner combo. And they get the win with that. I've said it before and I'll say it again. As a tag team, they've actually been pretty impressive. I think there's a lot of money potentially in Bodie Hayward. And I think there's a lot of money in Andre Chase being like the manager of Bodie Hayward. Because Bodie's got a great look. He's got athleticism. I think WWE, someone like Vince McMahon, I think is going to really like Bodie. He reminds me a lot of young Lex Luger, which is a compliment. A lot of people don't like Lex Luger, but I'm just saying, I think he's going to be more competent in the ring than Lex Luger also, over time. So I think that they got something good going here. I don't love the Chase U gimmick itself, but I do like the pairing of, if they can do more where Andre Chase is the mouthpiece and Bodie Hayward is the star athlete, I think that this could work in the WWE system. After that, we had Amari Miller over Ariana Grace. Amari Miller gets the win by reversing a sunset flip into a stack pin for the 1-2-3, and she wins this rematch. She gets, last week, Ariana Grace got one over on her, and now Amari Miller gets the win over, I don't remember if it was last week or not, but this was definitely a rematch, for sure. And I know Grace won the last time, and now Miller gets the win this time. In the main event of the show, we had Trick Williams defeat Dante Chen. Williams gets the win with a really nice 360 pump kick for the 1-2-3. You know, once again, I sound like a broken record, but it's just the truth. Developmental before developmental, but we're seeing development, and that's a huge W in my opinion. We are seeing development. Chase and Hayward, I think, both look great. Chase, I'd known a little bit as Harlem Bravado pre-WWE, but Bodie, I knew nothing about pre-WWE. And I think that Bodie is improving rapidly, and I think Chase, once again, I think the pairing is really, really good. Haven't seen much of Damaris Griffin and Bryson Montana, but once again, this is their platform. If you keep getting them on Level Up, they're going to keep developing in front of the crowd and keep getting better. Amari Miller and Ariana Grace are both getting better by the week. Trick Williams, I think, is going to be, it's kind of messed up almost, but let me preface this by saying, I think that Christian Casanova or, what's his name in WWE? Oh my God. Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes, I think, is he could be a major star. He has all the tools right now. Incredible in-ring performer. Great on the microphone. But I think because of Trick Williams' size, and granted, Trick Williams has gotten a lot better, too. I think that there's a lot of money in Trick Williams. I like Trick Williams. But I see it trending more and more. If this winds up on the main roster, for instance, I think that we're going to see Carmelo Hayes being more of a manager and more of a Leo Rush type scenario than Trick Williams being the featured wrestler because more of his size. Whereas Carmelo Hayes. Whereas Carmelo Hayes, he's ready right now. And he should just be a major star right now. And he should just be on Raw and SmackDown and just having great matches and becoming a worldwide superstar. And I think Trick Williams, once again, I think he has a ton of potential, but I could really see it going more towards Trick being the star and Carmelo being the guy helping make Trick a bigger star, if that makes sense. And Dante Chen, once again, is another guy who just gets better week by week by week by week, and that's all you can ask for. I think Dante Chen, by the way, has a great look, and he's solid in the ring. He's just learning, and I think that he's potentially another guy who they can make money with in the future. So, another successful episode of NXT Level Up, in my opinion. Moving on, we have results for MLW Fusion. Show starts off with Davey Richards over Danny Rivera. Richards gets the win with a delayed Gotch-style pile driver for the 1-2-3. Really, really good match. One thing about MLW that I think it slept on, and this show isn't like the best example of it, but it's a really good spot to find just some like good, long, competitive, just sports-based pro wrestling matches. And I think Davey Richards and Danny Rivera is a really good example of that. Once again, Richards gets the win with a delayed Gotch-style pile driver for the 1-2-3. And after the match, Richards does a short interview where he basically says he's coming after Hammerstone again, and he still wants to become the MLW World Champion, which I think he should definitely have his focus on that. I think the company should have Richards in that mix. As a matter of fact, I would be fine with Dave Richards being the World Champion. They have a lot going on with Hammerstone right now, but I think that Davey, he's got the talent and the way that he's featured in the show and his name value and his career history and all that stuff. Like, I think that, you know, basically I think that they've been smart with how they booked Davey. He wins most of his matches. They're really good. They're really competitive. He looks like a badass. He looks credible. And, you know, he just hasn't won the big one in MLW yet. But, like, I think he's going to eventually, and it seems like he's going to be there for the long haul. He seems to be really happy being under contract to MLW. After that, we had a trios match where Microman, Aerostar, and El Dragon defeated Arez, TJP, and Mini Abismo Negro. The finish of this one was Microman reversing. He hits a nice reversal into a victory roll for the 1-2-3. Microman keeps his job in Major League Wrestling with that win. And the main event of the show, we had Alex Hammerstone, the champion, defending his MLW World title against Cesar Duran. This match never really winds up happening, as basically Richard Holiday comes out. He beats up Hammerstone. He comes out to the ring with Alicia Toot. Holiday lays the beat down. And then Cesar Duran says, like, oh no, that's not all. And Mads Kruger and King Muertes come out to the ring, and they continue the beat down on Hammerstone. So it's just a multi-person attack on Hammerstone. And then the Von Erichs come out and they make the save to clear the ring out. And Cesar Duran sets up a trios match that we're going to get between Kruger, Muertes, and Holiday against Hammerstone and the Von Erichs, which I think is going to be a really damn good match. A lot of talent in that one. But outside of that, really not a ton to talk about when it comes to this episode of MLW. They had a pretty good segment, looking into the life of Calvin Tankman, which I think you should check out. You know, I talk about him a lot on this show, and I talked about him earlier today on this show as well. But, you know, Tankman, I think I like what they're doing right now with him, you know, his tag team with EJ and Nuka and stuff. But, like, I think Tankman solo, like, he could be the MLW World Champion right now, and it would totally work. That all being said, solid episode of MLW Fusion, but, like, in all honesty, the main thing I would seek out this week, and this is rare because usually I recommend the whole show, but honestly, I'd mainly pay attention to the Davey Richards versus Danny Rivera match, if it was me personally. I'm not going to say don't watch the show. I mean, the trios match was entertaining. Don't get me wrong. But then, like, the no contest in the main event, and that was really just made to set up a trios match later on. So, that said, that was MLW Fusion this week. And you can watch that show for free on YouTube whenever you want. After that, we have the results for NWA Power. This is another show. You can watch this whenever you want on YouTube. It airs first on Fight TV, though, but then the replays become available pretty soon after on the NWA YouTube channel. But these are the results for National Wrestling Alliance Power. We had Maxi Impaler over Ella Envy. Max gets the win with I think Max calls it the Welcome to Wasteland. I'm not sure if that's what the commentary's calling it. It's like a one-shoulder backbreaker for the 1-2-3. I'm going to call it Welcome to Wasteland until they tell me differently. After that, we had Scion over Joe Alonso. Scion gets the win with three rolling DVDs in a row to get the 1-2-3. By the way, I think that Joe Alonso has a lot of potential. I like Joe Alonso a lot. I think NWA should do more with him. Scion's been getting a steady push in the company, and I think Scion's talented. Like, I don't really have anything against Scion, but Joe Alonso, I think, could be money for them. They just got to push him and feature him the right way, but they got some potential there with him, in my opinion. And the main event of the show, we had Trevor Murdoch defeat Mike Knox by DQ. The finish of the match, basically this is what winds up happening. Mike Knox is arguing with the referee. Mike Knox tries to use a ring bell, and the referee isn't letting him use it. And Mike Knox winds up shoving the ref, and the ref disqualifies him. And then he goes and tries to use the ring bell after the match, and Murdoch outsmarts him and clotheslines him over the top rope, and that's pretty much the end of the show. So, made Mike Knox look like a real jabroni, but at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think anybody, I hate to be this brutal, but I don't think anybody cares about Mike Knox being in, like, the world title scene or, Trevor Murdoch, I think that the NWA has done a pretty decent job of, like, building Murdoch and him being the former world champion and everything, and they're trying to get him back to that spot of challenging for the title again and all that. I just don't think there's any interest in Mike Knox being a part of this, and I know he's a part of the quote-unquote Cardona family with, VSK and Chelsea Green, and that there's multiple layers to the story here because Murdoch wants to get after Cardona again. Like, I get it, but there's just kind of a jabroni-looking way to have him look in this match. Once again, like, he shoves the referee, he doesn't even wind up using the ring bell after everything, and he winds up getting outsmarted and knocked out of the ring. I mean, just kind of came off really lame, in my opinion. So I'm gonna be honest about this episode of the National Wrestling Alliance's Power, not a great show, in my opinion. Just not a great episode of Power. Although I will say, I mean, Maxie and Paler, good to see them doing their thing. Really like what they've done on the indies, and a squash match, but a feature match for Max. I thought Scion and Joe Alonso was a good match. Like, I got nothing against it, but to watch an entire show basically to see Scion versus Joe Alonso, especially if you don't know the two of them or you haven't been following the NWA, it's just kind of like a nothing episode of NWA Power, unfortunately. So that's that. And the last set of results we got, I'm going to give you some quick results for the latest Black Label Pro show. This was BLP's Always Bet on Black, and this is available on Fight TV. That's F-I-T-E, Fight TV. These are the results. Excuse me. We had Damn the Dad over Dark Sheik. Violence is Forever, the team of Dominic Green and Kevin Koo, over Yuya Yamura and Josh Alexander. We had Anthony Green over Marcus Mathers. Joey Janela over Super Crazy. Crash Jackson over Keita Murray and Kobe Durst and the Rotation in a four-way match. We had Nick Wayne over Titus Alexander, Mike Bailey over Cole Radrick, Billy Starks over Effie, Tom Lawler over Jordan Oliver, and Kevin Blackwood over Shaza McKenzie. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I'm Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at FightTalk_, FightTalk_. Make sure to check out the Spotlight every Thursday on the main YouTube channel for Fightful. We're normally live at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursdays, but this Thursday we're going to be a little earlier because I got to do a little extra work at my other job. So we're basically going to be on at 8:30, just an hour earlier. So 8:30 a.m. Eastern, myself and Jeremy Lambert doing the Spotlight. We'll have an interview for y'all with an independent wrestler and or content creator like we always do. And we'll be talking about the world of pro wrestling. We got a lot to talk about with Double or Nothing. We got Hell in a Cell coming up. We got a lot of the stuff we talked about today on the Weekender, because we'll talk about the indies. We'll talk about a whole bunch of stuff over there on the Spotlight. So make sure to check that out, youtube.com/Fightful. And Yeah, as far as right here, please use my code FIGHTTALK, FIGHTTALK, all is one word, no spaces, on IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv. Helps me out when you use that code. And please hit the like button right here on FightfulSelect.com. Till next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.